Let's fucking do this. Hello, folks. Welcome to So Bad It's Bad. This is John Lester.
And this is Sonesh Chainani.
So, Sonesh, I see we've, and I think I fucking did this, we've cleverly written on our show notes here, welcome, comma, host name.
We have, yeah.
It was, even though I practiced, and I knew this was going to be a problem in my head, because I had read ahead in the fucking notes, I came very close to saying, welcome, host names.
By the way, if you want to stay John Lester, I will take the name host names, because I think that's actually not a bad, John Lester and host names is pretty good.
That is a much better set of hosts. So as you can tell, we are expert podcasters.
Experts, absolutely.
Experts. And this is going to be a podcast where we show some of our other expertise, namely our creativity, our capacity for genius brainstorming. So we're going to take dumb ideas and make them even worse.
Yeah. And just so you know, our qualifications, we have come up with many bad ideas in our lives, and we've also acted on a fair number of them. So
that's absolutely true. That's
very true. Depressing. Very okay. True.
So, Sonesh, you have written something here about a word I don't know called chin dogs. Nope.
False.
Chindogu.
False.
Okay. What is a chin dog?
So a chin dog or chindogu, and I'm sure we'll get comments from our Japanese listeners, which will always be fun. So chindogu is a Japanese term for I believe it started in the last 30 or 40 years, started by one man. I forgot his name, but the idea is that it's kind of
well researched. If this podcast is going to be known for anything, it's going to be the quality and depth of its fucking research.
We are consistent. Even the research is so bad, it's bad. We're extending that to all elements of the show, including our theme music, which was created by John Lester on a computer. And John Lester is known for many things, but I would not say that creating music is one of them. But anyway,
I'm going to say host names helped a lot with the music.
So chindogu, the idea of chindogu is that it's kind of like a invention that's meant to show the absurdity of an invention. So it would be an example is a battery pack that requires a different kind of battery to charge it. And, you know, things that while solving one problem cause additional complications or are so cumbersome that while they technically are an invention, they wouldn't actually be used. And so it's kind of more of a theoretical.
So another example would be democracy.
Yes, exactly. Democracy was created to solve basically the problems created by oligarchy democracy.
And batteries.
And democracy has proved to be kind of not a very good workaround and basically just as cumbersome. So anyway, but one of my favorite things about chindogu is that, and apparently they don't patent these ideas because the idea is that anyone can be able to use them. So they share them and things like that. And one of the inventions in like the early 90s, when cell phones were just kind of starting to take off was a stick that you held that allowed the phone to take a better picture of you. Because the idea was that it was so laughable that this invention was not actually, you know, going to be helpful or used by anyone. And it basically described the selfie stick, which is kind of amazing before the selfie stick was amazing. So I don't know. I can find this description of this invention and put it in the show notes after, but, and as well as a working definition of chindogu.
All right. Chin dogs for the win and selfie sticks. A guy named Chindogu invented selfie sticks. That's what I took.
Correct. By the way, I just said I would add something to show notes. Do we have show notes? Or did I just commit you to making them?
I think we will have show notes at some point. My view is eventually this will all kind of be in a 3D kind of virtual realm, and the show notes will live in there. So that'll be excellent. Okay, let's move on to our first terrible idea session, in the category of movies.
Okay.
So here's my pitch. Here's the basic core of the idea. It seems to me like the movie making process is filled with a lot of difficulty in figuring out how to make movies that aren't terrible. So that like there's a lot of good movies that get made, but it seems like even just as many, if not more, not good movies get made. And there's a lot of people who put a lot of hard work into the terrible movies. And so why keep going back and trying to create new good movies when we can just take some of the old good movies and remake them? And obviously it's done. It's not like a totally new idea. But in particular, my favorite version of this is shot for shot remakes,
which actually exist.
That's exactly right. And are usually terrible because they do a bad job shot for shot remaking. And so I think part of the problem is they haven't figured out the twist to make a shot for shot remake actually work better or differently than the original movie. And so my idea is to have shot for shot remakes of really awesome films where all the actors are sloths.
Like as in animals or just kind of slovenly humans?
No, like actual animal sloths. And so the movie runtimes will probably be about 8 or 20 times as long.
Oh, I like that. I like long movies.
Yeah. So like, I don't know, Hunt for Red October.
Okay.
I haven't seen this in a while, but I just think if we could find like a good Scottish sloth who could pretend to be a Russian captain, that would be awesome. So I would watch that for like 8 hours.
Now, my question is this being done with like, are we hiring, you know, zookeepers and animal trainers and sloths from around the world? Or are these CGI sloth kind of things?
I think it's probably a mix of practical.
Yes, because some sloths would probably do a pretty good job in some of the dialogue scenes, but may not be as hard to convince to do some. You know, I mean, Hunt for Red October, there's action scenes, there's stunts. So you might want to CGI some of the sloth action, I guess.
I'm a Scottish sloth, and I understand I'm meant to play a Russian.
Also, I just realized if you do want the sloths to talk, you will have to use CGI and voiceover, because as far as I know, sloths don't speak English. So
maybe they just, but how do we know that?
Well, I think we know because, I mean, people do study them. They're not an unknown species with lots of secrets. I think it's kind of an open book. And I'm pretty sure that, like, we're relatively confident that we're not going to find out down the line that sloths have had the capacity to communicate with humans.
But science being as wonderful it is, I don't think that scientists have actually gotten a bunch of sloths together and put them on a movie set and said, here is the script to La Dolce Vita. We're going to remake it. And you do this.
See,
I don't think they've run that experiment.
No, I think that's fair, but I think one of the ways to make these remakes successful is you have to choose the right movie to remake. Okay. So what we know about sloths is kind of, they have a lot of charisma, right? What we also know is that they most likely don't speak English. Okay. So to that extent, I think movies, you know, the first half hour of the movie Black Beauty, no one talks. A girl rides a horse. So now she'll ride a sloth, right? So there's all these kind of, I think there's plenty of movies, you know, and especially there's all this trivia about, oh, for the first 20 minutes there's no dialogue. I think isn't it Rafifi, the heist movie where there's a half hour heist scene with no dialogue? And I think, having like a sloth Rafifi where they break into a bank and quietly steal money, I think would be absolutely, actually a sloth caper, I think really is the right way to
that's make pretty it. Good.
I think it's very good.
That's pretty good. So what I'm about to do, I'm sure, is racist against sloths, but
also not sure sloths are a race, but okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, what about a remake of King Kong where King Kong is played by a sloth?
Oh, I think that could be very good.
Yeah. Now, I mean, that's
now question though, because in King Kong, he climbs to the top of the Empire State Building holding a grown up woman. So the question is, will this sloth, which is probably 2.5-3 feet tall, the scale, it may not seem as effective, if that makes sense. It would be hard to see the sloth. You'd have need binoculars. Unless it's a CGI sloth.
No, I think it's got to be real. People are going to really get behind.
People will expect real sloths in their sloth remakes, of course.
If you get the right human actors and actresses, I think their passion and belief in that sloth is like 40 feet tall will convince the audience, even though the evidence of their eyes is that it's a little fucking slow.
So they basically have to be actors and magicians, like really committed.
I mean, it's sloths give it all. That's their professional.
Okay. The last thing I'll say on this is that I think, one of the famous shot for shot remakes was I think Gus Van Sant remade Psycho, and it was absolutely, I don't even think I watched the whole thing, but, if he had remade Psycho with sloths, and that's also an excellent movie because there's frequent periods of no dialogue, Janet Leigh, sloth with a blonde wig driving the car in the rain, right? Sloth taking a shower. I think that's a very good one.
Yeah, I'd watch that all day. Okay. Next category, next session of Genius.
Also, this just hit, the way you said that, this just turned into a game show.
And at the end we win embarrassment and
mockery. Exactly.
All right, in the category of business, so this comes from my friend Dove Hazelcorn, who writes in via Facebook, and we would love for our listeners to write in with ideas for us to work out, but this is Dove's: why not build a business that is a knockoff of a big successful company like Apple or IKEA? Just start stealing a small share from a huge company and you'd still be super rich. So what industries should we target? What big companies could you knock off and get a little tiny portion of to chase that paper? Mm. Sonesh, you're yourself a captain of industry in many respects.
I'm a titan. Absolutely. I don't have a great answer, but I think that what you'd want to do is you also don't want to work hard, right? So you want to knock something off that you can make a lot of money with while also doing little stuff. That's why I don't think Apple is a great idea, because there's all this technology stuff. IKEA, again, it's low rewards. But if you could somehow knock off very expensive looking stuff, that's why I think fake handbags, fake watches. Get a factory in the Far East and make a bunch of Patek Philippe's, and I think so many rich douches, they assume that if it comes in the right packaging or it's expensive, it's good. So they're not going to look that, they might not know that watch or the bag, is not authentic. Whereas I don't see the reward in trying to steal or, beat Apple at its own game.
Yeah, that's fair. So what about this? What about you take something that's like basically free and you charge a lot of money for it for rich douchebags?
You mean like bottled water?
Yeah. So bottled water is a good example. I was thinking, what about texts? That to just a texting service where just to send a text costs $1,000.
Why don't we drop it down that each text costs 50 cents, which is still not insubstantial composed to the amount. So each text costs 50 cents. It's a very low tech base. I think the way you sell it is that this does nothing else but text. So you can't get distracted with the phone. Oh, maybe even when you use it, it kind of shuts or blocks off all other apps for that period. So you literally just have to text.
Yeah, yeah. And there's like a time limit. Oh, maybe you pay. I want to charge $1,000. So you pay $1,000, you get like 10 seconds to write your text. And then if you can't finish in that time, fucking, you're done. You got to pay another $1,000.
It's great because it has elements of restriction, competitiveness. Yep. By charging, you make it seem somehow elite or that it's offering a service, which is actually not offering that's better than anything else. In fact, you're paying more for a worse service. But yes,
that's exactly.
But it's presented as a goal in itself and not some free side application.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
good.
It's pure
signaling. It's pure. Whatever that dude's name that came signaling. Up with the idea.
Exactly. But I think those, you know, the thing he hits on is a good one. You basically want a signal. Well, yeah, 100% right.
And no backspace key is the other thing, I think. So you just, you know, you gotta be careful. You gotta be a good, like, little typist. That's a winner. So my other thought is, I don't know if this is still true, but one of the biggest kind of companies in the world for a long, long time has been the Japanese Post Office.
Okay. I know nothing about the Japanese Post Office. Instruct me.
Well, I have no fucking idea. But for some reason, they're very, very large and they make it like, you know, billions and billions of dollars in revenue every year.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know what they do, but apparently, like, it's a big deal. So I'm thinking, again, to go back to Tobe's idea, take a little piece. If we could get, like, just delivering mail to, like, one building in Japan.
Yeah, it's not bad.
That'd be pretty good. That's probably worth $100 million right there.
You know, Tobe's point about stealing from a huge company, you know, why make it metaphorical? I mean, what if you actually went to Apple or IKEA and in the dead of night you just stole a small sector of their company, like the machines that make chairs, or you kidnapped a bunch of coders working on a project? I think that would be a lower entry cost and more feasible, honestly.
Oh, fuck. See, now, all right. So when this was about a decade ago, maybe not quite that long, but we had just moved and we needed like a bunch of new furniture. And so we went to IKEA. My wife Irene and I went to IKEA with our kids. And we found this rug. And this rug is going to be, it was like a nice IKEA rug. So it was several hundred dollars. And so we had that and a bunch of other stuff in the cart. And we're going through the IKEA checkout process. And the woman scans it and rings it up, and the rug comes up for like a tenth of its actual price, for like $60 or something. And Irina starts to say, "Oh, I think," and I'm like, "Nope, no, I think it's fine. That's never mind." and I just let the mistake pass. And I'm like, Irina's like, "What are you talking about?" I'm like, "Nothing. Don't worry about it. I'll explain the car. Why don't we just go? Just keep going. Just keep walking." And then we get to the car. I'm like, "Oh, they made a mistake. And I just didn't want you to accidentally correct her." And it's at that point that our then, you know, 12-year-old ish daughter pipes up and is like, "So you guys just are stealing?" I was like, "God damn it. Why?" Okay. So I have stolen from IKEA, unfortunately.
But you know, that's another thing. Mistake. Can you incentivize companies that make mistakes to benefit you as well?
Yeah, yeah. Bank error.
So I remember. You remember that store in New York? It's still there. Century 21. I once there bought a blazer. It had originally been a couple $100s, and it got marked down all these times. Finally, there was just a red sticker on it that said $1.97. And it didn't really fit. And actually, within a few months of me, I think I just donated it. But I could not buy it just because to see something that clearly, I don't know. It felt so good to buy it, even though I knew I was not going to wear this white jacket that went slightly past my elbows.
I will pay you. I'll pay you one IKEA rug.
Okay, day. Perfect.
All right. I think next we are going to move into. So one thing that Sonesh and I have decided is to try and justify this like terrible idea of a podcast is we're going to do try and highlight a little bit of good in the middle of it. So I think part of the idea is we each episode we'll pick a good cause and we'll talk about that good cause. And so Nash, you've got one for us to kick off.
I do. So one cause that I want to talk about that's pretty near and dear to my heart is an organization called Exchange for Change, which is based in South Florida in Miami, where I live. And it's a nonprofit that teaches writing to students in prisons, incarcerated people, men and women, and now juveniles. I'm on the board of the organization. It's actually amazing. Been around by four or five years, started by one woman who went in on her own into the prisons. And now we teach, you know, I want to say 30 classes in three different institutions, including film, comedy, screenwriting, poetry, Shakespeare. They're putting on a Shakespeare play as well. And yeah, they do sketch comedy, although some of it is deeply not funny, surprise. And it also runs writing exchanges with students on the outside at different schools and colleges, like University of Miami and various high schools, so that people who are not in prison get anonymous essay exchanges with students on the inside, and they critique each other's work. So it's actually amazing. It has changed my life. And you can donate or find out more about it at the website is www.exchange-for-change.org. Or you can follow us on Facebook or Instagram by just searching Exchange for Change.
All right. Exchange for Change. Sounds great. Now, time for celebrity career plan.
Oh man, so many to choose from. This is one where we will never ever run out of ideas.
No. All right. So this is hopefully going to be a recurring segment where we check in with a celeb, maybe somebody who's who's at a low-ish point or had maybe stalled out a bit on their celebrity career, and we basically create a little career plan for them to kickstart, to re-embiggen them in the social scene. Let's start this week with, and I've picked this person pretty much at fucking random, Kathleen Turner.
Kathleen Turner. She's an interesting one. Why don't you start? I'm at a loss, I have to tell you. I was not expecting to be talking about Kathleen Turner at 10 at night.
So I haven't thought about Kathleen Turner since the Romancing the Stone movies, probably back in the 80s.
Okay.
Those
Michael
people.
Michael Douglas, yeah.
So a fine actress, famous for her voice. Now in her, I would guess mid-60s, haven't seen her.
So she was in probably 12 or 14 years ago. She was in The Virgin Suicides. Did you ever see that with Kristen Dunst? She played the mom of these five girls. And I think she looked extremely different. And it was also very interesting to see. I feel like in 10 years, she had made a change from like the body heat femme fatale to suddenly the mom of like five teenagers, heavy alcoholic. It was a pretty big change. Like she changed the generation of like the age she was playing in about 10 years. And I think that there may have been some alcohol or drug struggles in the past. So how are we going to turn Kathleen? I see what I did there. How are we going to turn Kathleen Nurse? Okay. No,
I am way ahead of you. So I have Googled Kathleen Turner.
Oh shit. This is research.
Yeah. I've done actual research. Oh my God. And I got very confused real quick. Because the first things that came up that weren't like IMDb was for a book series, which you can go on Amazon and buy. There's a 7-book novel series called the Kathleen Turner book series.
Is it the same Kathleen Turner?
Well, it is now. So this is my plan. I think we turn all of these books into movies. where Kathleen Turner plays the character Kathleen Turner. And so here's what these books are about. The first one, and so I know you were on the right track, is called No Turning Back. Kathleen Turner, book one. This is a wonderful novel. It has 4.5 at least stars for over 1,000 customer reviews on Amazon.
That's a lot. Wow.
Yeah, it's fucking a lot. By Tiffany Snow. I'm just gonna read the description here. So, being a bartender by night and a law firm runner by day helps make ends meet for Kathleen Turner. Mostly. Being 23 and single in Indianapolis, so let's change it as we go. Being 64 and single in Indianapolis wasn't exactly a thrilling adventure. But again, that's not what Kathleen wanted, at least not until she met Blaine Kirk, Navy SEAL turned high-profile attorney.
Blaine Kirk? Everything.
Blaine motherfucking Kirk.
That's the fakest name I've heard.
Nope, not yet. Let me finish reading. Blaine is everything a woman could want. The only problem, he's her boss. Blaine is known for playing the field, and the last thing Kathleen needs or wants is to get involved with him. But when her friend is murdered, and it seems Kathleen will be next, she may not have a choice. Now, Blaine is the only thing staying between her and people who want her dead, including assassin for hire, Cade Denon. Woo!
Cade Denon, girl. I'm sorry. Two of the main characters are named Blaine and Kane?
Yes, yes, it gets better. Beautiful but deadly, he'll kill anyone who gets in his way, even the woman who makes him question everything he's become. And it goes on in that kind of vein. Yeah, so I think Kathleen Turner is like the right person to play Kathleen Turner.
I agree 100%. Plus, I can see Kathleen Turner being a bartender by night and a law firm runner by day. I think that if she was not going to make these books into movies, she should actually just do what the character of the book is doing and just kind of follow the lead on the back cover and live that life.
Yeah. So whether or not the cameras are rolling,
exactly. I think it's kind of a double win, really. It's like she can try to make these movies about this character, or she can just live that character's life without any cameras on her.
So a couple things. One, she says bartender by night, law firm runner by day. I originally thought that was a bad way of saying she was running, like the person in charge of a law firm.
No, she's a...
Apparently that's not right.
She's like a courier, essentially, I believe. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So that's one little item. Two, if you eventually go down into the descriptions of the Kathleen Turner series, which includes No Turning Back, Turn to Me, Turning Point, Out of Turn, Point of No Return, Blaine's Turn, and then Cade's Turn.
Blaine's Turn?
Yeah, Blaine's Turn, which that's book six. It retells the story of book one from Blaine's point of view, and then Cade's Turn is book seven. But in any case, eventually you find out, although it's not clear from the description of this first book, which obviously is where we would start with this entire Kathleen Turner saga, that Blaine Kirk and Cade Denon are in fact brothers.
Ew.
Big okay, tool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Now, it's not just Blaine and Cade. It's Blaine and Cade both times.
Oh, wow.
So who do we think we can cast for these Blaine and Cade roles? That's what I want to know.
I want to say that one thing that strikes me about this book series is that not only do the characters not have believable names, but that the author, Tiffany Snow, doesn't also seem like a real person. I'm pretty sure this book series was written by a fictional character. But the question is, who created Tiffany Snow? I think it's turtles all the way down, John. I'm not sure we're ever going to get to the bottom of this, really. I think the more you dig, the more fictional character names you will find.
Can I pitch you some ideas for Blaine and Cade?
Sure.
Okay, so for the Navy SEAL turned high-profile lawyer, I'm thinking Zach Galifianakis. I think
yes.
I think he's got the chops.
What about if there were two actors who played one in the Navy SEAL flashbacks? You get someone very buff and good looking, and then like just a year later when he's a lawyer, it'll be like 9 months later, and then suddenly it's Zach Galifianakis. And I worked at a large 600-person law firm for 4 years, and I can say that the transformation does happen that quickly. So I think that it's fair.
So for the assassin, the lawyer's brother, I'm thinking James Earl Jones. I think you go straight to James Earl and be like, we got you. And then that's like a career plan for him too. He can attach himself to this Kathleen Turner rocket ship.
And I think also, aside from just the phrase brothers, no mention should be made of the familial relationship or the backstory between Zach Galifianakis and James Earl Jones.
Nope, that's right. Age, race, many correct differences to correct kind of just push into the series for future decades.
Agreed.
To figure out. Yeah. Okay. Well, you're welcome, Kathleen Turner. We would love to have you on the show. Also, obviously, trademark executive.
Yeah, producer. And obviously agent commission we get as well. Yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah, 100%. Okay. Category inventions. This comes also from Facebook, from Paul Brown. Inventions for situations that never occur. So Paul's had an example for us, which was apparently a real product at the Lowe's store, which is a padded cover to put around the straps of knee pads. So you already own knee pads. And you're going to be out working with concrete, as I'm sure you often do, Sinesh. And this is a padded cover to put around the straps of the knee pads so that, like, the straps don't hurt your legs. Because clearly, in this model, you're doing concrete work in shorts.
Wow.
Yeah. So apparently, it's a real-ass product, according to Paul. It's apparently no one has ever purchased it, even though it actually got made. And his other ideas would be baby parachutes for skydiving with your newborn, or waterproof sombrero for scuba diving.
The worst part, I mean, if I was on a dive boat and the guy's like, here, pay $5 extra and you can wear this waterproof sombrero, I think I might, but I don't know if that means that it's a good idea or just one of the bad ideas that you and I would buy into.
Yeah, that's fair. So, situations, inventions for situations that basically never happen. Any thoughts?
No, I'm not coming up with anything right now. How about you? Anything? The whole tagline of inventions for situations that never occur. I feel like at this point in modern society, everything occurs at some point. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that's fair. I'm well past child having age, so I don't really think about this kind of thing too much. But I think it's generally considered. People wear condoms for practical reasons. But what if you didn't? What if that was a condom just because you wanted a condom? It didn't provide any sexual protection for babies or diseases. You're just like, nah, I just want to get that bad boy covered up, at least part of it.
Goal is just basically to decrease physical pleasure, make things awkward, and like just kind of like spoil a good time in the bedroom for no reason.
So I'm thinking topless condoms. It just covers the shaft, right? Is my theory. You just done deal. Once you go topless, you can't popless.
Okay.
So that's an idea.
It is an idea. That was a correct statement. every once in a while we come out with a profound truth.
Let's move on to our next category, culture, holidays.
Okay.
We need new holidays. There's a bunch of bullshit holidays. And then, like the big ones where you give like cards and shit. And then there's even more ridiculous holidays that nobody pays attention to. But like, what? Don't you feel like there's not enough?
I feel two minds about it. There are not enough holidays where we get the day off and actually can party. But then, because the internet is terrible, there are whole websites and things of like, today is national, waffle day. Like every day has 100 kind of made up holidays. Right. They just, you know, I mean, sometimes they take off, like Talk Like a Pirate Day, which I think is pretty cool. And I forget what the other one is. There's a donut one that has a fair amount of traction, but I think maybe what would also be good is, given that there's these existing calendars of holidays, we should maybe on our next episode and going forward, pick some of the existing holidays and think about how we can implement or improve them. Don't you think that's a better idea? Because first of all, fuck it. We don't have time to invent new holidays when other people with less busy lives than us can do it for us. However, we can take their holidays and make them worse.
So what you're saying is, to go back to an earlier idea, we just steal some of big holidays already.
John, you know this. Good artists imitate, great artists steal. And I think what the last half hour has shown everyone is basically that we are definitely great artists.
All right. So coming up next episode, more holidays, more bad ideas. I want to thank you again.
This is so nice, Chinani.
Go on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe to So Bad It's Bad. Please give us reviews and likes. I'm sure that's a good thing. If you would like to send us a question, there's two ways to do it. Go on Twitter and use the hashtag So Bad It's Bad. And put your question out there and we will find it. Or you can email us at ideas@sobaditsbad.com.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we're out.